She's as eager to die as you are, Gotrek.
We need her alive if we're going to find this wretched prince, he replied, and charged after Lucia. Malyneth turned to Trakos with a despairing look. The Stormcast took an instrument from his belt and fixed it to the head of his sceptre with a click. Cool blue light washed over Malyneth's shoulders, and she climbed down the steps after Gotrek and Lucia, Trakos following closely behind. She could make out the slayer's squat, bulky form a few steps ahead as he halted in front of a doorway next to the priestess. The door was hanging from its hinges. As Trakos's light washed over an opening of curved, metal-edged bone, it revealed a glimpse of a large underground chamber beyond. Lucia swore under her breath and shook her head. Gotrek grunted in annoyance and booted the door down, stomping into the room with axe raised. They rushed in after the slayer, and Trakos's scepter revealed a gruesome scene. Body parts were scattered across the floor, glistening in pools of blood and shrouded in fluttering moths. Gotrek grimaced, but Lucia fell to her knees as though she had been gut-punched, gasping, reaching out to the remains but not daring to touch them. Moths rose from the blood as her hands hovered over it. Malyneth scoured the room for signs of the killer, but it was empty apart from the corpses, torn apart with such savagery that the whole chamber was splattered with gore.
Impressive, she muttered, nodding at the carnage.
Gotrek glanced at her and nodded to Lucia. Malyneth shrugged and gave him an apologetic smile. The room was unfurnished, apart from a few chairs arranged either side of a tall, curved door that led further into the temple. The door was ajar, and there were trails of blood leading to it. A snuffling, grunting noise came from the next room, and then the sound of something heavy moving around.
"The unburied," whispered Lucia,
her words barely audible. She climbed slowly to her feet and staggered to the door. Gotrek grabbed her arm and shook his head.
"Let me go first, lass," he said,
his voice softer than usual. She wrenched her arm free and carried on, the others close behind. Malyneth staggered to a halt on the other side, unable to understand what she was seeing. The room looked like a man-made orchard. The circular walls were punctuated by six trunk-like columns of bone that arched upwards and met in the centre of a domed ceiling. Each of the columns had a protruding limb about 12 feet in the air, and dangling from them was what looked like pale, rotten fruit, each one about the size of a man's head. No, realized Malyneth. They were more like cocoons, dusty, bone-white bundles like elongated eggs made of paper strips. And they were not rotten. They had been attacked. The six cocoons had been slashed by claws or a knife, and dark, viscous liquid dripped from the shredded remains. Lucia howled at the sight of them, her expression more horrified than when she had seen the corpses in the previous room.
"What is this?"
said Gotrek, reaching up to one of the torn cocoons.
"No!"
cried Lucia, her words rough with fury.
"They should not have been here! The prince swore that they would be moved!"
"What are they?"
asked Malyneth, peering into one of the dangling sacks. She could see what looked like pieces of dried meat inside.
"The unburied,"
said Lucia, her voice trembling.
"Your ancestors?" asked Malyneth.
"My grandmother,"
gasped Lucia.
"My great-grandfather. His great-grandmother. All of them. They were all..."
Gotrek silenced her by raising his hand and nodding to the next doorway. The light of Trakos's scepter shone through into the next chamber, and there was something coming towards them. Lucia slumped against the wall, clutching her head.
"Prince Volant swore an oath,"
she sounded furious.
"They should have been taken to the capital."
One of the mechanisms fixed to Trakos's belt began to whir and click. He looked like he was about to say something when the doorway exploded towards them. Fragments of metal and bone filled the air as a huge shape smashed through, tearing half the wall down as it came.
"Grungi's beard," snarled Gotrek. "That's more like it."
The creature lumbered into the room, shrugging pieces of masonry from its shoulders. It was twice the height of Trakos. It was clearly a cousin of the ghouls they had fought on the borders of the princedom, with the same deranged eyes and slavering jaws. But it was massive, clad in thick, scarred muscle and bristling with mutant growth. Every inch of its greasy flesh sported tusks of bone that jutted through its muscles like spines on a burr. Its face was smeared with the same dark liquid that dripped from the cocoons, and as it locked eyes on Gotrek, it let out a feral roar, dragging down Morwall as it launched itself at the slayer. Gotrek answered with a roar of his own and leapt at the giant, swinging his axe as he flew through the air. The blade flashed, thudding into the ghoul's chest with such force that the monster staggered back, carrying Gotrek with it. They smashed through the ruined doorway and landed in the room beyond. Gotrek howled in annoyance as he stood atop the prone giant and tried to haul his axe free. The blade refused to move. Rather than bleeding, the ghoul's chest had swallowed the axe head, puckering around it and holding it fast. The ghoul rose to its feet and punched Gotrek with an enormous fist, sending him flying across the room. The slayer smashed into a stone column and slammed to the floor.
"Ugh, God," he muttered, as rubble pattered down on his scalp. "You're a big lad."
While Gotrek grabbed the broken column and tried to climb to his feet, Malineth sprinted past him, knives drawn, and leapt at the monster's chest. The ghoul lashed out with talons like swords, but Malineth whirled out of reach, arching her back as she dodged the blow. Before the monster knew what was happening, she dragged her blades across its throat and leapt away. Malineth landed with a curse. Her blades had remained embedded in the ghoul's neck. Just like Gotrek's axe, her weapons were being absorbed by the creature's flesh. Now that she saw it more clearly in Trakos's light, she realized that not only was the monster covered in spurs of bone, but also fragments of weapons. Hilts and hafts jutted from between its ribs and shoulder blades, mementos from previous battles. The ghoul locked its fist around Trakos's throat, lifted him into the air, and slammed him into Gotrek like a club. They crashed to the floor just as Malineth reached the monster, and the three of them ended up in a mangled heap. They helped each other up and backed away, panting and limping. Gotrek wiped blood and dust from his face.
"I didn't escape the Dark Gods to be pummeled by this oaf. Distract the booger and I'll—"
The slayer's words trailed off as two more of the creatures stumbled into the room, just as massive and deformed as the first, their combined bulk almost filling the chamber. One was unarmed, but the second had wrenched a bone column free and was gripping it like a makeshift spear, its splintered point glistening with dark liquid.
"Three of them," muttered Gotrek. "And they swallow weapons."
Malineth was gripping her head, trying to quell the agony reverberating round her skull, and Trakos was leaning against the wall, sparks coiling around his neck brace as he took deep, ragged breaths. Losia strode past Gotrek, gripping her scythe and glaring up at the three giants with no trace of fear.
"They murdered the unburied!"
She sliced her scythe cleanly through one of the ghoul's legs, causing it to stagger, then whirled away into the shadows, swallowed by the darkness before the creatures could fight back. Malineth nodded, impressed by the girl's speed and bravery. She grabbed Trakos's scepter from a shattered plinth and hurled it to him. The stormcast raised the light, dazzling the giants, as Gotrek bounded across the room and leapt for his axe again.
"Blazed penance!"
cried Trakos, launching into song as his scepter shone brighter.
"And wondrous gleaming pinions!"
The first ghoul staggered back into the other two, unbalanced by the impact of the slayer slamming into it. As it fell, Gotrek roared in triumph, drowning out Trakos's song. Runelight rippled across his knotted muscles, blazing in his beard. With a final ear-splitting roar, the slayer ripped his axe from the monster's chest. Gotrek cartwheeled backwards in an arc of blood, then rolled across the floor and charged back at the ghoul. This time, rather than sinking his axe into the monster's chest, he followed Losia's lead, swiping low and cutting through its ankle. The monster fell heavily, smashing more columns and scattering cocoons. As the ghoul landed, Malineth dashed across the room, snatched a vial from her belt, and hurled it into the monster's gaping mouth, dodging aside as it reached out to grab her. Gotrek had already strode on to meet the other two giants. The first tried to land a punch, but the berserk slayer was too fast, and the blow only succeeded in smashing more bone from the walls. Losia leapt from the shadows and hacked through the ankle of the next ghoul, sending it smashing to the floor before she vanished into the darkness again. Malineth was ready. The giant had hardly hit the ground before she hurled a vial down its throat and backed away.
Trakos marched past the downed ghouls and levelled his blazing sceptre at the one still standing, causing it to reel away from him, arms raised in front of its grotesque face. Gotrek barreled across the room and swung his axe with such force that it hacked straight through both of the ghoul's legs, dropping it in a shower of splintered bone. The creature slumped against the wall, and Malaneth hesitated, swaying from side to side as she tried to spot a route to its head. Then she had a better idea. She ran to the monster's butchered leg and punched her fist into the severed muscles, leaving a vial embedded deep beneath its pallid skin. As Gotrek, Malaneth, and Trakos backed away, Malaneth's poison took effect, and the three giants began to smoulder. Smoke plumed from their mouths as they thrashed across the floor, clawing at their throats and eyes before erupting into flame. The blaze was so ferocious that everyone was forced to back away to the doorway they had originally entered through. Gotrek gave Malaneth and Trakos a grudging nod of respect.
"Not bad!"
he yelled over the sound of the dying ghouls.
"The unburied!"
cried Lucia, pointing her scythe at the door on the other side of the fire. The flames were spreading across the floor into the chamber the ghouls had emerged from.
"The others may still be alive. They'll be burned!"
Gotrek looked at the flames and laughed.
"Rather your paper eggs than us."
Losia glared at him, still gripping the scythe. For a moment, Malaneth thought the priestess might try and attack the slayer. Then she shook her head.
"Only the unburied can guide me to Prince Folant. If you let them burn, you will never see the prince, and you will never find Nagash. The prince could be anywhere in Morbium, and the princedom is vast. We could search for years and not find him. But the unburied see all. They could tell me right now where Prince Folant is, and the best way to reach him without encountering more of the Mordants."
Gotrek stared at the fire. One side of his face was glossy with old scar tissue. He ran his finger over the burns.
"I've been through bigger fires."
He turned to Trakos and Malaneth.
"Either of you know another way to find this prince?"
They shook their heads. Gotrek gave his beard a thoughtful tug, looking at the priestess. Then he raced into the flames. Malaneth cursed and headed after him, but the heat drove her back.
"Trakos!"
she called.
"Your faith will protect you. Follow him!"
Trakos nodded and limped towards the fire.
"No, wait,"
muttered Malaneth, putting her hand on his chest.
"I know what you'll do if he has immolated himself. You'll take the damned rune."
She glanced at Losia.
"Is there another way out of there?"
Losia nodded. Trakos shoved Malaneth aside, heading for the flames again, raising his voice in skull-tightening song. But before he reached the fire, Gotrek came charging back into the room, head down and cradling something, trailing sparks and smoke as he ran past Trakos and Malaneth and dropped to his knees, still laughing.
"Got it!"
he said, standing up and grinning at Losia. The priestess ran to him, ignoring the smoke and the heat as she prized his arms apart.
"Intact,"
she whispered, gently lifting a cocoon from his grip. She closed her eyes and let her head fall gently against it.
"Now the others,"
she said, staring back through the flames.
"There should be another cocoon like this one."
"It was empty."
Gotrek nodded at the mess scattered across the floor.
"Ruined like these."
"You're lying."
Losia put the cocoon under one arm and drew her scythe, her lips quivering. Gotrek raised an eyebrow, calmly ignoring the blade that was inches from his face. Losia's eyes widened and she drew the scythe back to strike. Malaneth grabbed her arm.
"He doesn't lie. He really is that boring."
The rage dimmed in Losia's eyes.
"All gone,"
she muttered.
"Apart from that,"
said Gotrek, nodding at the cocoon she carried. Malaneth tried to get a better look at it, intrigued by the awe Losia obviously held it in.
"What is it?"
she asked, struggling to see it clearly in the firelight.
"How is that your family?"
Losia sheathed her scythe and cradled the object like an infant. Then she nodded to the antechamber they had entered through. She walked towards it, indicating that they should follow.
"Let me show you."
Chapter 8. The Unburied. Once they were gathered in the room, Gotrek shoved the door closed behind them, blocking out the heat and smoke. Losia was still hugging the object, and she gave them a wary look.
"You are not one of the Erebid. You do not understand the unburied."
Gotrek's expression darkened.
"I've just singed half my beard for this."
"'What is an Erebid?'
asked Malyneth, amused by the woman's odd nervous behaviour.
"'I am.'
Losia still sounded hollow and dazed, but she tried to explain.
"'I mean, we are. The people of Morbium. It's what we call ourselves.'
She waved them away.
"'You must not stand so close. When I am communing with my ancestors, I will be in a fragile state.'
Malyneth raised an eyebrow.
"'Emotionally? Physically. My form will change. You must not touch me until the rite is complete. If you touch me, it won't only be me who is in danger. You will become part of the ritual. The unburied will inhale your soul, and your flesh will be transformed, made brittle. You will be drawn into your past lives, and the past lives of the unburied.
I've no idea what you're talking about, grunted Gotrek.
He gave Malyneth a warning glance.
But I'll make sure no one interferes with your spell.
Malyneth gasped in mock offence.
Always you doubt me, Slayer. Stay away from me until I'm done, Lucia said. Or you risk more than just your flesh.
She headed over to one of the columns that arched up the walls of the chamber and sat down against it. She muttered quietly under her breath. It seemed to be some kind of song.
Oh,
Malyneth rolled her eyes.
She's a wise woman. I imagine she reads palms.
She gripped the knives at her belt and smirked. She could show Losia how to perform a rite that actually achieved something, and it would not require any lullabies. As Malyneth strolled around the chamber, waiting for the rite to finish, she considered her next move. She'd had no option but to follow the Slayer this far. But what if there really was some way he could reach the God of Death? Nagash was known for many things, but sharing was not one of them. If Gotrek reached Nagash, the Slayer would be destroyed, his soul would be enslaved, and the rune would be taken. She had to find a way to get her hands on it before this ridiculous quest got out of hand.
Maybe if you'd paid attention to your surroundings, you might learn something to your advantage,
said her mistress, causing the amulet to pulse warmth across her chest.
Unlikely, she thought. A berserk hog, a babbling necrophile, and a stormcast eternal who's so confused he can barely speak. They're not likely to offer much in the way of insight.
Something caught in Malyneth's hair. She batted it away, realizing it was one of the pallid moths. Another one fluttered across her face, and then another, until the air was busy with the things. She cursed and tried to wave them away. They were fluttering past her in a great cloud, heading towards Losia. They landed on the priestess like a pale robe, covering her and the cocoon in humming wings. Losia's hands were sinking into the surface of the cocoon, vanishing from sight. Then a pale light started to shimmer inside it, like a candle in a paper lantern. The surface of the cocoon gradually became transparent, and, as the light burned brighter, the cocoon's contents became unmistakable. At first there was a flurry of tiny shapes, circling like gnats. Then one began to grow and take shape. Malyneth could not help but laugh. There was such a contrast between the reverence in Losia's gaze and the pathetic, grotesque thing hanging in front of her. It looked like a wizened fetus, no bigger than a human head, but with the grey, weathered features of a decrepit old man. It had long, thin, grey hair and patchy stubble on its jaw. Its limbs were atrophied and wasted, and its eyes were milk-white. Gotrek grimaced.
I risked my life for a pickled corpse. How could that thing have got any more dead?
The unburied endure, replied Losia, speaking in hushed tones, her eyes still closed.
She moved her palms beneath the surface of the cocoon, as its contents began to move. Trakos muttered, and Malyneth smirked, as the shriveled thing kicked its legs, disturbing whatever fluid suspended it inside the cocoon. Slowly, it raised a withered hand and pressed it against Lucia's palm. Lucia whispered a prayer of thanks, and when she opened her eyes, the pupils and irises had vanished, leaving featureless white orbs. Then she began to undergo a more profound transformation. As the moths fidgeted across her robes, the dusty white texture of the cocoon washed over her, turning her whole body into luminous bone. The light of the unburied pulsed through her, and caught on the wings of the moths as they spiralled around her. Then the shape of the cocoon began to speak. No sound emerged, but its mouth was opening and closing, and Losia nodded in reply.
"How did you create such a revolting thing?" asked Malaneth.
"We did not do this."
Losia's voice sounded odd, like an echo.
"No mortal can preserve souls, not by natural means at least."
Losia nodded to the moths spinning around her.
"This is the power of the Noctuid."
"Noctuid?"
Malaneth frowned. "The moths?" Losia nodded, her voice hushed.
"Harbingers are linked to the next life. They weave the shrouds and preserve the spirit. Every one of our ancestors has been preserved this way for countless generations. We built our faith on the wisdom of our bloodline. Nothing lost, nothing forgotten."
Malaneth looked back towards the room containing the ruined cocoons.
"Until now, you mean?"
Losia's expression hardened.
"They should not have been left here. Each one of those cocoons held hundreds of souls."
She placed her other palm on the cocoon and whispered more prayers. The light was burning so brightly it looked like she had caught an amethyst star. The glare flashed over her hard, opalescent face, making her look like a work of devotional art.
"Will this thing lead us to your prince?" said Gotrek.
Anger flickered in Losia's eyes at the word thing, but she nodded.
"We are in a separation chamber. I have separated my soul from my flesh so I can speak with my ancestor."
She gave them all a stern look.
"You must be silent. If my concentration is broken, my form may be altered."
"You're what?"
laughed Malaneth.
"I have sundered my soul from my flesh. I am holding an image of my physical self in my mind so I may return to find it unchanged."
Malaneth frowned at Gotrek and shook her head. There was a long silence as Losia held the cocoon with her eyes closed, her hand still pressed beneath its surface. The only noise was a vague rattling sound coming from somewhere above. After several minutes, the shriveled corpse mouthed more words, and Losia nodded. There was another pause. Then the priestess opened her eyes. The moths scattered from her skin, and her flesh lost its shell-like texture, becoming normal again. She took a deep breath, then looked up at them.
"The prince is headed to see Lord Auron at the Barren Points, not far from here. 3 days' walk if we make good speed."
"Good,"
said Gotrek, striding away from the light and heading for the door.
"Then we should leave now."
Malaneth and Trakos followed, but Losia remained where she was, whispering to the tiny corpse.
"What's that sound?"
said Gotrek, pausing by the door and looking up, noticing the rattling noise for the first time. They all listened. It sounded as though someone were hurling stones at the roof. Malaneth looked at Losia. The priestess dragged her gaze from the cocoon and listened. Then she frowned, disconnecting her hands from the cocoon, extinguishing its inner light and rushing past Malaneth to the bottom of the stairs. Malaneth and the others followed her as she climbed back up to the key. The noise grew as they climbed the steps, becoming a fierce rattling din, like coins poured onto metal. As they reached the entrance hall, they were greeted by a spectacular sight. The sky was a veil of glittering shards.
"I've never seen this," said Losia.
She stepped towards the opening at the end of the hall, her hand outstretched. Gotrek grabbed her and shook his head.
"Watch out, lass."
Losia glared at him and pulled her arm free.
"He's right," said Malaneth. "We've seen this before. In Klemp, they call it bone rain."
Losia shook her head.
"Bone rain?"
Gotrek grunted and stepped back, avoiding the shards that bounced towards him.
"Weather from Nagash. It'll cut through you like knives."
They stood in silence for a while, stunned by the spectacle of the scene. It looked like they were trapped behind a waterfall spilled from the stars, and the sound was deafening, like waves crashing against rocks. Eventually, Losia looked at Gotrek.
"When will it stop?"
He shook his head.
"Could be days for all I know."
He scowled. Then he looked past her, back into the temple, a hopeful gleam in his eye.
"Do you people have anything to drink?"
Chapter 9. The Hounds of Dinan. The war had been brutal but brief. King Galen had not expected the level of resistance, but he had expected the glorious devotion of his men. The Hounds of Dinan. What army in all the realms could hope to stand against such warriors? Never had he felt so alive. He was almost grateful for the uprising. To rise from his fur-strewn throne and take up his spear one last time, one final war. The great wolf had smiled on him. The traitors had taken hold of an outlying keep, burning effigies and flying their colours from the walls in defiance of his rule. But King Galen could taste victory. He was days away from ending the rebellion and returning order to the entire kingdom. Loyal vassals from every corner of his empire had flocked to his banner when word of the rebellion spread. There were reports coming in from all the major engagements, describing victory after victory. By the time he reached the capital, there would barely be a rebel left to face him. He looked around as he rode towards the keep. Ranks of spearmen were arrayed around him, their golden torques gleaming in the darkness, their breastplates flashing as they followed him to the gates. Behind them came serried legions of foot soldiers, their pennants flying and their voices raised in song as the sigil of the hound fluttered in the wind.
"Surrender your arms!" cried Galen as he stopped his horse near the shattered gates. "I am no tyrant. Handle yourselves with dignity and you can live. The battle is over. The Hounds of Dinan are not savages. There need be no slaughter."
There was no reply. He could see figures rushing through the darkness up on the walls of the keep, readying their weapons and war machines for a final desperate defence. He had expected no more. But he had fought the whole campaign with dignity and pride. He was no fool. He was old. He had not expected this last chance for glory. But now that it had been given to him, he would show his men how a king should lead.
"Very well,"
he called.
"We have given them a chance to kneel, and they have refused. They have turned their back on the great wolf."
He raised his spear and pointed it at the keep.
"Hounds of Dinan! Advance!"
There was an oceanic roar. His army surged past him, howling war cries and rattling spears on shields as they rushed forwards. His men moved with such speed that they seemed to swarm up the walls with barely any need for ladders or hooks, washing over the battlements and pouring into the reeling defenders. Howls and screams filled the night as King Galen rode towards the gates of the keep. He did not have to wait long before the doors flew open, revealing the victorious faces of his men as they drove the traitors back, washing the courtyard with blood and setting fire to the buildings inside the walls. He strode over to one of the fallen defenders. The man was still alive, and as Galen offered him a helping hand, he started to scream desperately, trying to drag his broken body away.
"What are you?"
howled the man. Galen frowned. It was a strange thing to say, even for a dying man. And it was not the first time he had been asked this question.
"What am I?"
he laughed.
"I am your king."
The man would not stop screaming, and eventually the sound started to infuriate Galen. This had happened several times during the campaign. Every time he offered his hand, giving the wounded a last chance to surrender, they panicked and shrieked at him. He stooped down and pressed his hand over the man's mouth, trying to stifle his cries.
"There's no need for this," he said. "Lay down your weapons. Rejoin the hounds."
The man thrashed beneath him, blood flying everywhere. Too much blood, realized Galen. He had a broken leg, but there were no cuts on him. Why was he bleeding? The more Galen tried to calm him, the more the air filled with blood.
"What are you?"
cried the man again. But Galen found it hard to concentrate, and the voice grew distant. The air turned crimson, and Galen backed away, shaking his head, confused. As he stumbled away from the man, he realized how hungry he was. In fact, his craving seemed to have confused him. He'd imagined he was still on the battlefield, but hunger and exhaustion were playing tricks on him, throwing him back into the past. He laughed, realizing he was already at the victory feast. He leant back in his chair and grabbed some meat from a platter on the table. It was so rare, it was almost raw. Blood rushed down his chin as he ate, delighting in his well-earned appetite. Chapter 10. Remembrance. Gotrek grimaced as he drank the wine Losia had found, but Malineth noticed that he had managed to empty another skin. A few hours had passed since the storm had begun, and there was now quite a pile of them lying around him on the platform, all empty. It looked like he had been fighting overgrown bats and was now sprawled on their carcasses. He nodded to a row of shields that covered the walls.
"What do they say?"
They were sitting in a circle just inside the archway, silhouetted by the flashing rain. The torrent of bones bathed the group in ripples of light, making it look like they were underwater. The temperature had dropped, so they'd lit a fire, with Losia seated to one side of the slayer and Malineth to the other. Trakos was opposite Gotrek, his head bowed as he muttered to the flames, his face still hidden behind his helmet.
"The shield poems."
Losia's words were slurred. Despite her earlier protestations, she had eventually agreed to drink some of the wine. She claimed never to have drunk before, but grief had clearly given her a thirst.
"They record the deeds of the unburied. When an ancestor dies, we carve the story of their life into their shield and place it near the separating chamber. Then all who come seeking their wisdom will know how they lived and how they died."
Gotrek bared his teeth in a grim smile.
"Death poems. We have such things where I come from."
He grabbed another wineskin, tore it open and drank, staring morosely at the fire.
"Where do you come from?"
asked Losia. Malineth had noticed that she kept steering the conversation away from herself and her loss, as though unwilling to share her grief with strangers. Gotrek ignored her, hypnotized by the flames. Losia looked at Malineth.
"His world is gone," she said. "He says it was destroyed. Somewhere beyond the mortal realms, although he won't say much else on the subject," she sneered. "He talks about his ancestors almost as much as you do."
"You could never understand," grunted Gotrek. "You faithless elves have no concept of history or tradition."
He waved at the shield poems.
"You have no regard for your elders, never mind your ancestors. All you care about is yourself."
Malineth shrugged.
"Someone has to."
"My people respected the past and remembered their ancestors," said Gotrek,
giving Losia a sympathetic look.
"Much as you do. We recorded deeds on oath stones and..."
His words trailed off, and he shook his head, looking suddenly annoyed.
"What does it matter? They're all gone. All butchered. And thanks to the treachery of the gods, I did nothing to help them."
Losia was still holding the cocoon. There was no sign of the light or the figure inside. It looked like a rock, swaddled in dust and pale, fine-woven cloth. Malineth noticed that she was counting again, mouthing the numbers in silence. Then she frowned and looked up at Gotrek.
"Why didn't you help your people?"
"Grimnir told me I was his heir. He tricked me into the realm of chaos, promising me that I would finally meet my doom. The mightiest doom ever achieved by a slayer," he said. "Lies, all of it."
Gotrek lurched to his feet, staggering dangerously close to the archway. The bone shards were cutting into the ground just inches from where he stood, talking to the darkness.
"And while I languished in those wretched hells, forgotten, everything and everyone I knew was blown apart."
His voice grew hoarse.
"If I'd remained to fight, I would have found a way to save them. But the gods tricked me. Everyone was killed and I was left alive. Sworn to die and I outlived everyone. What could be crueler?"
It was the most Malineth had heard Gotrek say about his journey to the mortal realms. The most she had heard him say on any subject, for that matter. Usually he just cursed, muttered, or laughed. The wine had affected him differently to the ale he usually drank. He was still morose and bitter, but more willing to talk.
"What did you see in there?"
she asked, trying to sound only half interested, not wanting to spoil the moment by prying too eagerly. Even Trakos ceased his muttering and looked up at Gotrek. The Slayer stomped back over to the fire and sat down with a grunt, taking another swig of wine.
Things with no names. Things beyond words. Citadels of sound. Songs of blood. Oceans of hate. You wouldn't understand even if I could show you. I couldn't understand them even as I saw them. For a long time I believed the lies. I believed that I had been given a great doom. To slaughter demonic hosts for all eternity. Until I died or they did. But nothing dies in there. Not truly. I killed and was killed with no victory or defeat. The gods laughed at me.
His voice cracked with bitterness.
Then forgot me.
He grabbed a burning stick from the fire and crushed it, the flames blinking in his eye, embers spiralling around his scarred face.
They won't forget me again.
He drank some more and fell quiet. His earlier high spirits had faded. Malineth was about to ask Lucia more about her own people when Trakos did something she had never seen him do before. He unclasped his neck brace and removed his helmet. The seals were dented and caked in filth, and they made a strange hissing sound as he prized them apart. Even Gotrek looked up in surprise as the Stormcast Eternal's face was revealed. His hair was long, white, and knotted into thick plaits. Released from his helmet, it tumbled down over the metal of his cuirass like ropes, giving him the appearance of an aged shaman. His skin was the colour of polished teak, and his face must once have been handsome in a fierce, leonine kind of way. It was not handsome now. Every inch was covered in scars. They were not the rippling burn marks that covered half of Gotrek's face, but deep, jagged cuts. One of them went right from his jaw to his forehead, wrenching his brow into a constant scowl. He looked warily at them, as though removing his helmet had made him feel exposed.
"How did you escape?"
he said. Without his helmet on, Trakos's voice lost its thin metallic quality and became a deep rumbling tenor. The combination of wine and surprise seemed to trick Gotrek out of his usual reticence. He stared at Trakos, then stared through him, as if picturing somewhere else.
"I began to see things,"
he muttered.
"Things that had not happened yet. There may be things that had happened long ago."
He shook his head.
"Losing my mind, I suppose. Fighting for so long. Furious at my betrayal. Struggling to remember my own name."
He looked at Lucia.
"I had a rememberer once, too. Like your shield poets. A manling. But not like the most of that cowardly, cack-handed race. He was a skilled fighter, and brave with it. Good storysmith, too. He stood by me through everything. He would have come with me if I'd let him. Then, when the madness came over me, I thought I could see him still alive in some other world, preserved somehow through the long ages of my purgatory."
He laughed bitterly.
"I sometimes wonder if he's here, somehow, in these damned worlds you call realms. But then I wonder if it was someone else I saw, leading me through the realm of chaos, bringing me through the flames."
He seemed to notice everyone watching him, and his face hardened.
"Whatever happened, my search spat me out into that ugly furnace you called Akshi, surrounded by babbling idiots claiming to be slayers. Descendants of Grimnir, they said. If they knew him like I do, they wouldn't be so keen to claim his kinship. Not one of them understands what a treacherous crook their god is."
He pounded the rune in his chest.
"They're as useless as him, though. So maybe they are his spawn. They made this bauble, and then lack the strength to use it."
"What is it?"
asked Lucia, reaching out to touch it. She snatched her hand back as the rune singed her skin.
"Property of the Order of Azir,"
snapped Malineth, giving her a warning glance. Gotrek laughed, his mood lifting a little.
"Just you try and take it, elf.
He moved his beard aside, trying to look at the rune. He grimaced as he revealed its design, the face of a Duardin ancestor god.
Look at him. Sitting in my bloody chest, taunting me every time I see his stupid face.
That's Grimnir?
Asked Lucia.
Aye. His likeness, at least.
You wear a symbol of a god you despise.
Not by choice, lass. It didn't bloody look like this when I planted it in my chest. Besides, it has its uses. What do they call this stuff again?
He asked, looking at Malineth.
Urgold.
She rolled her eyes.
The Fire Slayers say it's pieces of Grimnir, scattered across the realms.
She stared at the rune.
Ridiculous, obviously, like all Duardin legends, but Urgold certainly has power. The Fire Slayers hammer it into their bodies to fuel their battle rage. But none of them are equal to the one in Gotrek.
She let her gaze caress the metal.
This is the Master Rune, forged by Crag Blackhammer himself. And when Gotrek destroys himself, I will take it to Sigmaron.
Malineth's pulse raced as she considered what that would mean for her. She would be the one who had secured a weapon powerful enough to win the war for the realms. Her slate would be wiped clean. No one would care what she had done in the past. None of her enemies in Azerheim would be able to lay a finger on her. Sigmar would probably make her a saint.
So,
said Lucia, frowning at Gotrek,
when you talk of your doom, you mean you wish to destroy yourself?
She shook her head.
You say your culture reveres ancestral wisdom, but you're prepared to throw away everything you know. What greater crime could there be than suicide? It's a betrayal of your ancestors and your descendants. You should preserve your wisdom. You should fight to pass on what you know.
I'm a slayer, lass, said Gotrek. I have to atone for...
His words trailed off and he shrugged.
I have things to atone for, though no one here can remember them.
He drained the last dregs of his wine and grimaced.
Gods, this is Draxpis.
They sat in silence again, listening to the rain and the flames. Then Losia looked at Trakos.
And are you the Slayer's servant?
Malineth laughed.
I serve the God King, replied Trakos.
His brutal features were exaggerated by the firelight, making his face almost as savage as Gotrek's. His eyes looked like stars, smouldering under his furious brow.
And the Order of Azir.
He glanced at Malineth.
We both do.
Lucia looked from Trakos to Malineth. The enmity between them was so obvious she asked her next question with a doubtful tone.
You're working together?
It was Gotrek's turn to laugh.
The elf wants the rune, and she doesn't care if that requires my death. Pretty boy here feels the same, but he's tied himself in knots trying to work out what the hammer hurler would think is the right thing to do. He's desperate for the rune, but he doesn't want to behave badly. That's right, isn't it, Smiler? You don't want to be a savage like me?
Trakos's eyes flickered with emotion, and his head kicked to one side, but he said nothing.
You've been here before,
said Losia, leaning over to study Trakos's armour.
You've been to the Amethyst Princedoms before.
What? Demanded Malineth. Losia pointed to the jumble of equipment that covered Trakos's belt. Tucked in amongst the measuring devices and weapons was a metal-framed hourglass filled with dust that shimmered as it moved. The piece was topped with an ornate, leering skull.
Or did you buy that from someone else who has been to the Amethyst Princedoms?
Trakos grunted and covered the hourglass up. He looked angrier than ever, and his head twitched again. Gotrek snorted in amusement.
Something to hide?
Trakos grabbed one of the wineskins and drank. He ignored Gotrek and Malineth's intrigued expressions and turned to Lucia.
I fought with a retinue of Stormcast Eternals along the southern reaches of the Amethyst Princedoms. They were hammers of Sigma. My own retinues had been...
He hesitated, then tapped his turquoise armour.
I belong to a storm host known as the Celestial Vindicators, but I was the last of my retinue. I was headed back to Azir when I was attached to the Hammers of Sigmar. We were strangers to each other, but we fought well. We took back the Amalthea Keep, then scoured the whole coast. No servant of chaos now draws breath for nearly 300 miles of those walls.
Lucia nodded. The Amalthea Keep. I know the name. The Radican princes. In the ancient times, they were our allies. There are still sacred texts written by Radican princes held in the libraries of the Lingering Keep.
She shook her head.
You have claimed back the keep. It is centuries, countless centuries, since those lands were free of chaos.
Something flickered in Trakos's eyes, then vanished as quickly as it had come.
We claimed the keep and the land around it. I was attached to the Hammers of Sigmar to perform a specific duty.
He tapped the devices clasped to his belt.
My job was to send a signal to Azir, so that the rest of their storm host could find a route through the ether void. While my comrades rounded up the locals and armed them, I helped the retinue responsible for repairing the keep.
He paused and took another deep swig of wine.
Weeks passed. No word from Azir.
He shook his head, frowning.
Well, nothing I could recognize. Only howls and screams. Someone was trying to warn me, but it was like cries heard through a wall. Necroquake was the only word I could decipher, but I had no idea what that meant. We continued our work, scouring the plains for remnants of the Chaos Dogs.
His gauntlets screeched as he crushed the wineskin tighter, as though imagining squeezing the life from someone.
We had them on the run. We attacked with ferocity. Such brutality. I showed the Hammers of Sigmar how celestial vindicators fight. Even the Bloodbound were not prepared. They had grown lax. They never expected anyone to try to reclaim the princedoms after so long. They thought these lands were theirs.
His voice grew louder, as though he were addressing a crowd rather than three people sitting right next to him.
But reclaim them we did, with barely a single loss. We tore down their idols and citadels. We ripped open their prisons. We freed wretched souls who hadn't seen light for decades. It was glorious. The hammer fell. The Bloodbound died.
Malaneth took the wineskin gently from his hand, interrupting his memories. She took a sip and spoke quietly.
And yet, when you approached me and the Slayer in Akshi, you were alone. There were no Hammers of Sigmar with you when you found us on the slain peak.
Trakos's head was shaking as he stared at her, rage bleeding from his eyes. She slipped a hand discreetly to one of her knives, wondering if she had pushed him too far. Trakos's anger subsided, and he slumped back.
We crushed chaos. We did as we were forged to do. Those beasts could not break through the armor of our faith, but...
He hesitated.
But chaos is not the only threat in Shaish. The voices from Azerheim grew fainter and more desperate. So we focused all our attention on fortifying the keep and arming the slaves we had freed. We knew it would not be long before word of our success reached the warlords in control of the rest of the princedom. We had taken the keep through speed and surprise, not through superior numbers. Without reinforcements, we would be hard-pressed. The slaves were terrified of us at first, but as the weeks wore on, they saw a chance. A chance for revenge, if nothing else. Some still knew legends of the time before chaos. Times when man lived free of tyranny. Under our care, they grew stronger, braver. We started moving out into the surrounding villages, fortifying them, spreading across the princedom. When the attacks came, we were ready. And so were the mortals. But then we began to hear of other things.
His expression darkened.
Cannibalism amongst the wretches we had armed and fed. We had shared Sigmar's word with them. We had told them that the Age of Chaos was over
and that a new era had begun. But as soon as we left them to their own devices, they fell back into savagery. His voice trembled with rage. If people knew what we sacrificed to fight for these realms, if they knew what it meant, we are immortal, but we... He shook his head. After so long under the lash of chaos, they had fallen back into the debased worship of the blood god. Or at least that's what I thought. I rode out from the keep to see for myself what had happened.
His voice fell quiet.
It was not chaos. They were not worshipping Khorne. I saw it as soon as I reached the nearest village. Worship of any kind was now beyond them. They were no longer human. They had crawled into the mass graves left by their oppressors and dug up the remains.
He grimaced.
They were eating corpses, feeding on them like animals. After all we'd done for them, I could not understand it.
He pounded his fist against the ground, scattering embers.
We freed them, and they turned into animals. Couldn't they see that they were risking everything? They were leaving us open to attack? We saved them, and they betrayed us. They did not even...
Trakos cut himself off again and shook his head.
What did you do?
Asked Malaneth, sensing that he was reluctant to finish the story. Clearly the wine had had the same tongue-loosening effect on Trakos as it had on Gotrek. He looked torn, but he could not stop talking. Malaneth had seen humans like this before, too ashamed to speak of their deeds, but too tormented to stay silent.
I was furious, he muttered. Some of the Hammers of Sigmar were there, and they tried to calm me, but I would not listen. I tore through the village. Those people were going to ruin everything, and I was determined not to... I butchered them. All of them. I showed them how the God King deals with those who betray their saviors.
Malaneth shrugged.
Seems reasonable. You saved them and they turned into ghouls. It's ill-mannered, if nothing else. I don't blame you for taking a hammer to them.
Gotrek frowned.
You said the other hammer hurlers tried to hold you back. Why? You were doing the work of Sigmar. They were ghouls. Like the things we fought here in Morbium. Why shouldn't you slaughter them?
Trakos would not meet their eyes, and his voice became flat.
I was furious. It was a kind of madness. I could hear my comrades calling me, but their voices were like the screams of the ether void. They made no sense. Like a pack of animals howling at me. My hammers rose and fell, smashed and crushed, filling my eyes with blood. Only exhaustion finally forced me to pause. And then I saw the bodies I had left.
Malaneth nodded, finally guessing the truth, finally understanding why Trakos's mind was as broken as his body.
They weren't all ghouls, were they?
Trakos did not answer.
You were killing humans, she continued. That's why the other Stormcast Eternals were trying to stop you.
Trakos spoke quietly.
I walked back the way I had come, but I could not make sense of it all, of the corpses. Some were definitely the things I saw gnawing at the graves, but others were...
He shook his head. Gotrek grimaced, drinking more wine. Losia looked at Trakos with new eyes, appalled.
What did the Hammers of Sigmar do?
Asked Malaneth. Trakos's voice was a dull monotone.
Tried to control me. I fought them off.
Malaneth laughed incredulously.
You fought them? Your own kind?
No, not that. I fought them off. I don't mean I attacked them. Not that, at least. Even now, changed as I am, I would not harm one of Sigmar's own. But I resisted them. I abandoned them. I left them to their fate. I could not rid myself of the faces I saw. I still can't.
Gotrek was looking thoughtfully at him, and spoke with softer tones than usual.
"The gods make fools of us. All of us. You were there because they ordered you to be there. The God King did not order me to kill unarmed families."
Gotrek glowered at the rain.
"When the gods talk of order or chaos, they just mean glory. Their glory. They have no interest in what happens to the people who win them that glory."
"Changed as you are," said Malineth.
Trakos shook his head, confused.
"That's what you said,"
she continued.
"You said, changed as I am, I would not harm one of Sigmar's own."
Trakos stared at Malineth, and for the first time since they had met, she felt something other than amusement when she looked at him. She did not feel that she was looking into the eyes of a man. It was not a human gaze. What were they, these storm-cast eternals? She had never really considered it before, but now she felt a chill as she realized just how peculiar he was. In some ways, he seemed less human than the ghouls.
"I've lost myself," he muttered,
finally freeing her from his inhuman stare and looking back at the fire.
"I died for the first time at the Battle of Visurgis. It was glorious. Agony, yes, but glorious. When I felt my soul, still intact, blazing in Sigmar's halls, hammered on the anvil of apotheosis, I knew I had been reborn, reforged, so that I could fight again. Then I died again, fighting greenskins at the Rotha Pass. The pain was greater that time, but still the glory was unimaginable. A chance to live again, to fight for the God King, to fight against all that is wrong in the mortal realms."
He looked up at the stars.
"The third time I died, the pain seemed like it would never end. Perhaps something was wrong. Perhaps I was too broken to be saved. I could not be sure. But the torture seemed endless, and that was not the worst of it. Once it was over, and I rejoined the host, I could not quite remember what it meant. Why were we fighting? Everything that had previously seemed so important felt like stage directions in a play, or the words of a song. Nothing seemed real."
He turned to Gotrek, shaking his head.
"I could not remember my family, not even the name of my father, or the place of my birth."
"And then you were sent to Shaish,"
said Malineth, guessing what came next. He nodded, without meeting her eye.
"All I could remember was the songs, the hymns we learned in Azir, those glorious tunes. I sang them as I fought, praying that the words would hold me in check, that they would guide me when my mind could not. But the truth is that I do not know what I am. I have killed so many in Sigmar's name, thinking I was doing his work. But was I? Always?"
He frowned and fell quiet again. No one spoke for a while. Even Gotrek looked troubled by Trakos's speech. Something occurred to Malineth.
"What will happen to you when you return to Azir? Word of your flight from Shaish might have reached them. Unless the hammers of Sigmar all died, what will your commanders say when you return empty-handed and without your men?"
"I will not return empty-handed. I will submit to whatever judgment is deemed appropriate, but I will not return with only failure to report."
He gazed at the rune in Gotrek's chest.
"I will return with a prize."
Gotrek's laughter boomed around the hall.
"Of course! You want me dead too, just like Ditchmaid, so you can cut this thing out of me and—"
"No." Trakos tightened his fists.
"I am not a murderer. Whatever I did in the past, I will keep you alive. I will let no harm come to you until I can convince you to come with me to the Celestial City."
Gotrek staggered to his feet, unsteady with drink, and grabbed his axe.
Murder!
The calm, sympathetic tone had vanished from his voice, replaced by a savage roar. His face was contorted by rage and amusement.
Let thee be no murder, manling! Face me in honest combat! Earn the bloody rune!
Trakos remained seated.
I will not. You are not a creature of chaos, or an agent of the ruinous powers. Nor are you a revenant summoned by the great necromancer.
He shook his head.
In truth, none of us know what you are. I doubt you know yourself. I will not fight you.
He opened his hands and stared at the scarred, riveted palms of his gauntlets. Gotrek stood for a moment longer, then dropped heavily back down beside the fire, grabbing another wineskin. His belligerence had lacked its usual fervour, almost as though he were going through the motions because it was expected of him.
Pity, he muttered.
Malaneth considered what she had just learned. A Stormcast Eternal, whose faith had been shaken, was far less of a threat than the hard-line zealot she had thought she was travelling with. There was no hope of convincing Gotrek to stroll up to Azir and hand himself over to the Order to offer himself in service to the God-King. And if Trakos was too battle-weary to kill the Slayer and take the rune, that meant she was the only one with a chance of getting it back to Azirheim. She leant back, sipping more wine, and grabbed some of the food Losia had fished out of the temple storerooms, feeling happier than she had for a while.
"And what about you?"
asked Losia, turning to face her.
"Are you here to protect the Slayer too?"
Malaneth stifled a grin, and Gotrek snorted.
"She'll protect me, unless my death offers a better chance to get the rune," he said.
Malaneth splayed her hand against her chest in mock offence.
"And what about the soul you carry?"
asked Losia. Malaneth laughed.
"You don't want to know what's in my soul, priestess."
"No," replied Losia. "I don't mean your soul. I mean the one you carry around your neck."
Trakos and Gotrek both glanced up, surprised. Malaneth clasped her hand around the amulet.
"She knows what you did!"
Her mistress laughed wildly, delighted by the turn of events.
"Oh, how will you explain this one?"
"What do you mean?"
Malaneth said, pitching her voice a little too loud.
"It's just a memento of a kill."
Losia frowned, looking suspicious.
"Surely you know it's more than that. If not, I can help explain. I'm the High Priestess of the Seermont. Even the most shrouded spirit is visible to me. I see every soul in Morbium."
Malaneth cursed inwardly. She needed to silence the idiot woman before she ruined everything.
"It stopped," said Trakos.
"What?"
snapped Malaneth.
"The rain,"